And tonight, our special guest, Tom Horn, his latest work, Apollyon Rising 2012. And we'll be back with Tom in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go, back with Tom Horn. So, Tom, this is fascinating, the tie-in between the Capitol Dome, the Great Seal of the U.S., and the Mayans.
Yes. Yeah, it was absolutely, like I say, it was really the turning point for me. It was what made me determine that this book had to be written, that this research had to be put down, because, you know, that the year 2012, important to a lot of other cultures, blah, 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 but were there, you know, is it any part of American history? And when I became aware of this nearly 500-year-old Mayan prophecy connecting the colonial count 1776, with the final 13 cartoons of the Mayan calendar ending in the year 2012, and how academia was viewing that as a mirror to the countdown, to the Christian last judgment. I mean, this just was extraordinary to me, and I wondered if early American scholars, those who, Freemasons, Washington, D.C., those who influenced the Great Seal of the United States, other artifacts important to the founding of the country, were they aware of this Mesoamerican timeline? So that became my next goal, was I wanted to know if they were aware of it. Did it influence anything that they did or designed here in the United States? Because I have to tell you, George, at first, I mean, I really thought this had to be a coincidence.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in those, though. You know that.
Well, I know, but, you know, I'm just thinking, okay, I mean, how unusual is this, that the final 13 cartoons ending in 2012 would match the starting and ending dates on purpose on the Great Seal of the United States? I just had to have, this is where I had to have evidence. I had to have proof. I had to know that the Freemasons were aware of this. So my investigation of the matter eventually led me to conclude that there was not just evidence, but good evidence, that it wasn't a coincidence, that it was influenced. I'm talking about the 13 steps on the Great Seal of the United States and the countdown towards the year 2012. And it's not original with me. In fact, it's been kind of an open secret for a lot of years. Paul Foster Case, you remember, wrote about this years ago, saying that since the date 1776 on the bottom course of the pyramid on the Great Seal, since that number's so important in the symbolism of the seal, that it would not be unreasonable to suppose that the 13 courses of the pyramid represent 13 time periods. Well, that's been out there for some time. There's been a lot of speculation about it, but of course, what does that mean? 13 periods of time, what is that, 100 years, 50 years, 13 years? Nobody really knows what that means. So that's why it became important to me to figure this out. And I don't have time on this show. I don't want to run out of time and miss the big points by making the little points. But I mean, we even showed how that the tracing board of the first degree Freemasons actually also points to the year 2012, showing that they were aware of it. In fact, if you look at the tracing board of the first degree Freemasons, anybody can see this. The sun is depicted sitting in the dark rift of the Milky Way in the upper left corner. The moon on the right is joined by the seven stars of the Pleiades. Simply put, that's exactly the arrangement that's going to happen when the Mayan long count calendar concludes and the winter solstice, the sun aligns with the dark rift. This place the Maya described as being the road to the underworld. The tracing board literally conveys that at the moment that this galactic alignment occurs, the dawn of a new age of Osiris, the mythology is central to Freemasonic belief, will begin, and the ladder to heaven that you see on the tracing board is going to join the devout Mason to their great architect of the universe, December 21, 2012. But I wanted something more substantial than that, and that was, let me give you one of the quick ones.
Okay.
Irrefutable evidence that early Freemasons, those working with them, were aware of the Mesoamerican belief system, calendar ending date 2012, actually incorporated it directly into the design of the Capitol Dome in Washington. This is one of my favorite parts of this book, where we vividly illustrate how Constantino Brumidi, this very interesting tale about how Constantino Brumidi, he's an Italian Greek painter, he makes his name restoring 16th century Vatican frescoes, but then he immigrates to the United States, he becomes a citizen, he begins work for the Jesuits in New York, who were viewed at that time as the hidden power and authority, right, of the Roman Catholic Church here in the U.S., and he starts, you know, frescoes, the Church of Ignatius in Baltimore and so on, but then abruptly, In 1854, the Freemasons and the Jesuits finance a trip for Bromidi to go to Mexico. Now, while he's there, he paints a representation of the Holy Trinity in the Mexico City Cathedral, but that's not why he's there. He engages in making copious notes, guess what, of the ancient Aztec calendar stone known as the Stone of the Sun, which ends in the year 2012. He immediately returns from Mexico. He goes to Washington, D.C., first thing, meets with Quartermaster General Montgomery C. Meigs, the supervisor of construction over the wings and dome of the United States Capitol. He is almost immediately commissioned to be the official government painter. And what does he do? He starts adorning the hallways and rotunda of the Capitol with frescoes that are sacred to Freemasonry, the most famous, of course, being two things: the apotheosis of George Washington, which plays into this, and the famous frieze of American history, where, ladies and gentlemen, he paints in the portion of the frieze of American history, the Cortez Montezuma Mexican temple at the Mexican temple, he paints the Aztec calendar stone right inside the U.S. Capitol dome. And not only does he paint it, but he joins other both Jesuit and Freemasonic symbols to it, like the Maltese cross, the sacred fire that ends in the year 2012, and of course the Aztec calendar stone also ends in the year 2012. It's the fifth cycle that ends in the year 2012. So that right away we started finding that not only were these designers of the Capitol aware of this belief system, it meant enough to them to send the official painter to Mexico to make notes of it, to bring it back and paint it right inside the U.S. Capitol dome, just down below, of course, the apotheosis of George Washington. You've probably had William Henry on your show talking about a lot of what that symbolism represents, the Stargate there, George Washington being deified, becoming a god. What all this symbolism represents is the most spectacular, hidden in plain sight revelation within our country.
Now, most religions and civilizations talk about the return of their god, mm-hmm. of their Messiah. Do the Mayans talk that way too?
The Mayans, well, you know, we referred earlier to, they're in Tortuguero, Mexico, in Tabasco, mm-hmm. Mexico, where there is the, and for the life of me, I can't think of the name of the stone right now, but it's where there is the prophecy that actually refers to the year 2012 and the return of Bolan Yacteku. And this was, you know, the god of the underworld, but he's related to the nine planets, or the god of the underworld and his nine support gods. But, of course, the Mayans draw strong parallels between this this god of the underworld. But among the Mesoamericans, there is this belief that when you get to the Ouroboros, when the great, dragon of the sky, when it finishes its cycle and returns and begins to swallow its tail, that this can represent at that time, of course, a return of these gods. And each of these belief systems, whether we're talking about Quetzalcoatl, whether we're talking about Viracocha, Bolan Yacteku, whether we're talking about, in the Zohar, we're talking about not Jesus, but his replacement, the Jewish Messiah. And if David Flynn is right, Jesus himself in Matthew 24, each of these carry with this the sense that when this moment approaches, it is not just going to be a time of dramatic changes on earth, to the earth itself and to the people living on earth, but it's also going to witness the return of their God. Now, this is really important also with the Great Seal of the United States. Most people living in America are completely unaware of the fact that the Great Seal of the United States is a prophecy. And it's not just Tom Horn saying that. I mean, Robert Hieronymus, all of the best, most revered scholars in this field will tell you that the Great Seal of the United States contains the prophecies of the return of a pagan god. Mm-hmm. Even U.S. presidents, vice presidents, believed that the Great Seal is a prophecy of the return of a Masonic god who will give birth to a new world order. So even on the Great Seal, this countdown from 1776 to the year 2012 and when the all-seeing eye descends and fits atop the unfinished pyramid is representative. I don't know if you have or not. I would assume at some point you've probably had scholars or experts talking about Henry Wallace, the Secretary of Agriculture for the United States. Yeah, Roosevelt. They totally believed that this was a prophecy that was meaningful. And it was powerful in the way that it even affected their administration. The things that they did, the things that they believed, the movements that they made, it even affected policy.
You know, Tom, this could be one of the greatest stories we've both gone through, or it could be one of the biggest disappointments when we get up to 2012. You know, if nothing happens, we just go along the way we are, I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if there are people that...
I would.
If people believe it's going to play out like that movie 2012, they'll probably be glad nothing happens.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
But they knew something. They were aware of something. You know, we've heard the brunt of the jokes that they ran out of tablets to make calendars and things like that. Who knows, right?
Nobody knows for sure. Nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, if anything is going to happen, but we have a great deal of prophecies, and even, for that matter, right now, what appears to be scientific evidence and earth evidence that something, George, is brewing. Something is brewing, and it could be the unfolding of ancient prophecies.
Do you tie in any ET visitation or anything like that?
Well, certainly, I mean, the idea that these gods have been around for a long time, and of course the best experts in this field, Jacques Vallée, have all looked at like alien abduction phenomena. That's the term we put on it. It seemed to them to be identical to what these prophets often referred to when they're talking about, contact with angels or demons or elves or sithes, and that these gods who once came are going to return again. And, of course, many people look at these gods, the ancient astronaut theory, the idea that they were the ones that came here in the first place.
And seeded us.
Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, all of it is really just kind of a crude record of their coming, accelerating primate DNA so that all of a sudden from out of nowhere throughout Mesopotamia, you know, you've got the bedroom of civilization that springs up overnight as a result of monkey DNA or ape DNA or whatever being accelerated so that suddenly you have this evolution that leads to Homo sapiens. And here we are. Now suddenly we're here and civilization springs up overnight. And that those gods that we wrote down records and different people from their own culture and their own understandings and their own persuasions recorded those records in different ways. And that those are the ones who promised that someday they are going to return. And now, you've even got the Vatican out there now. So we've got this very strange mix of belief systems where you've got the traditional great religions like the Vatican and Christianity, and yet they're telling us now, there was a press release 2 or 3 weeks ago again where they're talking about, we may soon be in contact. Makes you wonder if they know something we don't know.
Well, you know what? I think they do, Tom. I just think they must have something tucked away from antiquity, and they just don't want us to know about it yet. But they seem to be wanting to leak it out to us, though, in stages.
Well, yeah, I mean, and maybe also to kind of protect their investment in their followers. They don't want their followers to suddenly deny the faith and walk away, and so they're saying to them, it doesn't contradict our faith. That's what Father Jose Gabriel Funes, in his interview a couple of weeks ago, said, that there's a certain possibility of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. The chances now are greater than ever that we are going to be in contact with them. And they're not talking about microorganisms. They're talking about ET. They're talking about ETI. They're talking about intelligent, either extraterrestrial or other dimensional. intelligence that makes contact with us. And of course, Funes, you know, his comments a couple of weeks ago and the other Vatican astronomers that were with him is really just on the heels of Guy Cosmonalgo a few years ago, Corrado Balducci a few years ago. In fact, Balducci,
he's gone, though, now.
Already interacting with them.
Isn't it interesting, though, that the, you know, the priests like Balducci, Malachi Martin, they're all gone. They've died.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, I have some theories about that that have actually have more to do with the rise of a new world order. But the bottom line is, intelligence sometimes is to be guarded at all cost. And sometimes there are those who, because of their position, come into intelligence that others don't want them to have. And then there's the fear factor that information might leak out to the public sooner than those who are, you know, at the apex of the pyramid, to use that metaphor again, don't want being made public. Or there's the threat that they're going to go public because they're telling you they are. And that's when you put yourself in a position where you can be taken out. Another thing I think, you know, you're talking about, will these, you know, these gods, will they come back? Will they return? All these different cultures pointing towards the year 2012. Isn't it interesting that at the same time we're seeing all these prophecies, we're seeing a world that seems to be kind of disconcerted right now. People are very concerned about politics, finances, the call for a new world order, the call for a new global governance. All of that also, too, smacks of prophecy. And yet, sure, while all of that is happening, we also have science developing around us. You look at what's happening at CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. It started back up this week.
And finally.
Finally. Well, you have them. You know, you have them birds that are moving through time and coming over and pooping on it so it won't operate or something. But you know, we say that tongue in cheek, and yet there are theoretical physicists that are not talking about that tongue in cheek. They're literally talking about how it might be being tampered with by somebody or something from the future who's trying to keep it from getting started. Well, they've started it up, but of course it's not running at full power yet. They're going slow. They're happy. But did you notice a couple of weeks ago during the press conference when they're saying, okay, we're getting ready to start this thing up, and they've got all the press corps around, you got the directors of CERN, and one of the top scientists there at CERN telling reporters that when they turn this thing on and when they get it to full power, that it might actually either create or discover previously unimagined scientific phenomenon. And he starts talking about unknown unknowns. And when the press, pressures him, what do you mean by unknown unknowns? He starts talking about other dimensions. And then this guy by the name, his name is Sergio Bertolucci.
Yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah, it's a great story, but did you hear what he said? He says, out of this door might come something, or we might send something through it that is an unknown unknown. I mean, did you ever think we'd live in a day? So you talk about how the gods could return. Well, we may be building the Stargate for them right now.
Well, and are they the same ones that also talked about God coming back in time to take them out?
I don't know. You're talking about Sergio Bertolucci?
Well, yeah, was he one of the group that said that? I can't remember the name of the scientist.
No, Sergio he's the director for research at CERN. That was what made this so spectacular, was that this wasn't some theoretical physicist on the sideline, you know, talking about you're going to turn this machine on, you're going to create black holes that are going to, or stranglets or whatever, that are going to come in and destroy the whole world. This is the director for research and scientific computing at CERN.
But also, though, they had a couple CERN physicists who said that they don't think God wants this to happen. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, Tom. And also, I want to get your take on why you think some of those priests who died may have been tied into the New World Order. That was fascinating. We'll be back. Well, a special Thanksgiving to my buddy Chris Kerber, who announces the St. Louis Blues hockey games. Chris, be well with your family. Enjoy the Thanksgiving festivities. You keep working around the clock, that's for sure. Next hour, Tom Horn will take your phone calls, and I'll be back with more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, you may have dropped a bombshell here when you talked about the New World Order and some dead priests. Can I pull some more info out of that from you?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot to this, but, you know, earlier I mentioned the prophecy of St. Malachy of the final popes, and there is this idea among Catholics themselves that the final pope on St. Malachy's list heralds the beginning of what they call great apostasy, followed by a great tribulation, and that this is going to happen with this the very next pope. And there are among Catholics, and even among some of their intelligent Catholics, intelligentsia, faith in these prophecies, and that it sets the stage for the imminent unfolding of apocalyptic events. Well, that's, of course, you know, something that a lot of non-Catholics would agree with, that we are moving into a period of time that could give rise to a false prophet who, according to the book of Revelation, is going to lead the world's religious communities into embracing a political leader known as the Antichrist. Well, in recent history, actually, in the cosmic scheme of things, you've had different Catholic priests, and surprisingly, most of them are dead now, who were outspoken. Who actually believed that there was an inevitable danger of the false prophet rising from within the ranks of Catholicism. I'm talking about Catholic priests saying this, as a result of what they called a secret satanic Illuminati Masonic influence. And these priests, you know, Father John F. O'Connor, Father Alfred Kunz, who was brutally murdered, Father Malachi Martin, you mentioned a moment ago, believed that there was a secret society, a sinister false Catholic infiltrators, in other words, who understood that, you know, as the Roman Catholic Church represents 1/6 of the world's population, over half of all Christians, that it is indispensable for controlling future global elements and matters of church and state. Well, I think people can still go to Google or YouTube or wherever it is. There's a 2-hour-long presentation by Father John F. O'Connor giving a homily titled The Reign of the Antichrist, in which he describes how changes within society and in the institution were already at work before his death to provide for the coming of an Antichrist. And in that sermon, he outlines the catalyst for this scheme unfolding as a result of what he called Masonic conspirators within the organization whose plan, which was called Alta Vendetta, would essentially take control of the papacy and help the false prophet deceive the world's faithful, including Catholics, into worshiping an Antichrist. Well, He wasn't alone as whistleblower to this vast Masonic conspiracy within the Vatican's ranks, working towards an anti-Christian or anti-human New World Order. You mentioned him a moment ago, but, you know, former professor, Pontifical Biblical Institute, Catholic theologian, Jesuit priest, Malachi Martin. I mean, you couldn't hardly get any more qualified than he was. He worked within the Holy See, and he was a member of the Vatican Advisory Council, a personal secretary to Jesuit Cardinal Augustine B., for crying out loud. He had privileged information pertaining to all kinds of secretive church world issues, but before, and in his own words, something pushed him, and Malachi fell and then later died, he had become both increasingly outspoken and candid about what he said was, he referred to it as pedophilic Satanism among certain of the cardinals, the other clergy in league with a secret Masonic diabolicus that had began following, and I'm sure that Coast to Coast had conversations with him about this, enthronement of the fallen archangel Lucifer in the Roman Catholic Citadel on June 29, 1963.
Well, this is, you know, beyond 2012, Tom, in the work that you've done with the Apollyon Rising, this time period over the next 3 years, 10, 11, and 12, I think could be one of the most dramatic times to live that we have ever witnessed, beyond tragedies of JFK, beyond the tragedies of 9/11. I'm talking in terms of humanity living in a time period where we could go either way. We could either go toward, you know, the light, as we say, or the New World Order group may be able to take over, and I don't know which.
Well, what's spooky about this, and this really is probably part of the heaviest part of this research, is where, you know, you line up the prophecies and you say, okay, all these different cultures said this, and here's what they predicted. My kids even asked me, by the way, George, you know, I always want my children to have hope for the future. So my kids, my grandkids, they'll see some of the research I do, and then they come to me, well, Grandpa or Dad, what do you think about the future? And I want them to be able to have hope for the future. And so basically what I say to them is, hey, here's what evil people would like to plan for your future. Now, what are you going to do about it? And give them the opportunity to say that their voice still matters, that their decisions still matter, that there is still hope for the future. And I would say to some of my friends out there that are also biblical eschatologists who have kind of a Calvinistic approach to things, you know, that time is laid out, it's going to begin here, it's going to end there, there's nothing you can do about it. One of the greatest scholars whose feet I was able to sit at when I was a young seminary student was a guy by the name of Bob Cornwall. Literally, like, in the New Testament, you would compare this to Paul sitting at the feet of Gamaliel. And this guy was one of the most extraordinary thinkers. You'd have loved him, George, because he would not just talk about theology. He would talk about physics and Einsteinian theories. And I still remember the day where he told me one day, we were talking about prophecy, and he told me one day, he said, well, don't ever forget that time is not relative to God in the way that it is relative to you. And that when you look at the way the Bible describes God, he is Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending. He's not moving through time like you are, like a leaf floating down a river, to use an Einsteinian metaphor. And that in the Bible it says that a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as one day. And he says to me, he says, so what if God should decide to wait one more day? 1,000 years of time could elapse on earth. So you got to, you need to keep your worldview in perspective that good people, positive people, powerful people can always change, can change the course of the future. There was very good reasons to believe when Hitler was on the earth that the Antichrist had come. But guess what? He might have been an Antichrist. He wasn't the Antichrist. Didn't happen in his period because good people rose up with great power and they overthrew what it was he wanted to do. Now, what troubles me now, George, is that we seem to come full circle. You have these fascinating prophecies about the year 2012, mm-hmm. but look at it in terms of human behavior. And when you reflect the prophecies of those ancients who were looking forward to the return of their gods in 2012, but today look at the current sense among the world's modern populations who are standing there saying, we need a savior. We need somebody to come and save us from our spiritual, political, financial chaos. The problem with that can be a giant setup for the coming of the wrong kind of an administration. You could see this, and by the way, yeah. I'm not at all saying that Obama is the Antichrist, so don't misread this.
No, I understand.
But you could see it in the last presidential election. I mean, reporters, politicians, celebrities, even preachers, churches, ministries, all celebrating the spiritual nature of Obama's meteoric rise from near obscurity to U.S. president. You literally had, Mark Morford, the San Francisco Chronicle, Chris Matthews, MSNBC,
sure.
U.S. Senator Gary Hart, everybody referring to his rise in messianic terms. Well, what this says to me is that we are at a dangerous time in history where the populations of the world, when Obama gave his speech in Germany and the German press saying, you have not just heard the voice of the next U.S. president, but the president of the world, that's the kind of sentimentality that leads to an Adolf Hitler. And I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about the condition of the psychic and psychological condition of the world today, if it's not careful, is setting itself up for the dawn of this new world order, which in essence is going to be slavery that we buy into because we are so desperate for somebody to come and save us now, when the real answer is still, in the guy whose shoulder is to the plow.
Tom, you've done a lot of work as a researcher. One, I guess, could call yourself a theologian. You've interviewed Colonel Jesse Marcel Jr., on the 47 Roswell crash. Does this keep coming into play on your work? Visitation, maybe other dimensions?
Yeah, well, certainly, absolutely. And it doesn't disturb my theology whatsoever. And in fact, I've done shows with you where we talk about human-animal chimera research, and sure. Of course, my take on it is distinctly different than most, like transhumanists, who might look at this as a terrific opportunity to alter ourselves in the next human evolution, and we're going to be, you know, we take on animal propensity, so now we can see into other dimensions. But this happened once before. The gods came down, the watchers came down, and that's exactly what they did. They blended humans and animals, and they provided a gateway through which they extended themselves into our reality. So I always believe that we are surrounded by intelligence that is both good and evil. And secularists, I think, who study sure. this with an open mind would say the same thing, that there are these grimoires who can latch on to human activity and can use it to produce evil. And then there is God. There are the angels of God. There is the Holy Spirit. There is guidance that can help us to make sure that we continue to follow, you know, the right way. So when I interviewed Jesse Marcel, I even asked him that question. I said, "Now, Jesse, you know, you're a good Catholic, you're a devout Catholic, and yet you completely believe that the product that your dad brought home that day was the leftover remains, physical, tangible evidence, a visitation to the earth by extraterrestrial intelligence. What does this do to your worldview?" And he pretty much, you know, had the same kind of worldview, I suppose, that Gabriel Funes does, that there could be all kinds of intelligence that was mm-hmm. created by God living in other galaxies elsewhere. You've had on your show many times Michael Heiser.
Right.
And in one of my books one time, I refer to Heiser's Lion, where I ask him one time, "Would you believe that all aliens are malevolent? Are they demons?" And his take on it was completely unique in that he believed that these could be something entirely outside of the standard paradigm. So all of us are aware, I think, that we are not alone in the universe. At least most of us believe that, 90% or whatever people believe, that we are not alone in the universe, and that this includes, of course, the idea of God and salvation and evil and good, and then we are interpreting this within our own comprehension, George.
End time prophecy, Tom, fascinates me, because though many civilizations have always felt they were in the end times, one civilization is going to get it right, and we will be. And it could be this one.
Yeah.
Could be this one.
Oh. It could be, and of course, you know, from my background and my personal beliefs, I'm very suspicious that we might not right now be living in those apocalyptic moments that are outlined within the Bible.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. So what's your next work? What do you continue to do as we get close to this time period, now that you've joined the club?
I'm going to go back. Like I say, I started out, I had been invited to be part of a documentary movie on the working title of this documentary film is The Coming Replacement Humans. The idea behind the film, of course, is where ultimately we're going to wind up, both with emerging fields of science, which seek to redefine what it even means to be a human. You saw this press release last week out of the UK. And what was startling about it was they're talking for a new open forum, a debate on how much will the public be willing to tolerate in terms of merging humans with animals and animals mm-hmm. with humans. And what was fascinating about that press release, it was a Reuters news story, was that that these scientists are already admitting that they are comfortable with up to 50% integration between humans and animals. And they also
incredible?
Admitted, huh?
It's incredible.
That's a Reuters news story. I can email it to you. And furthermore, they were also saying that they are aware of rogue scientists. We're talking the Island of Dr. Moreau stuff here, of rogue scientists who are not just doing this at the embryonic level. They're raising these things to full maturity for study. And so they're saying, because this is happening and the science is there and it's becoming easier and easier to do this kind of science, We need to have a debate. Well, you know, the embryology bill debates that went on in the UK about 24 months ago or whatever, there were Catholic priests then who said that if a woman participates in the donation of eggs or ovum in the creation of one of these human-animal chimeras, and then after the fact, you know, their conscience strikes them and they decide that they want to be able to raise this part human, part animal to be one of their children, to maturity, they ought to have the right to be able to do it. That was part of the debate then. Well, the what was going on in Britain was you have private laboratories that want to be able to get research grants. They want to get tax dollars for the research that they're doing. And so the government at that point decided they were just going to take it on a case-by-case basis. Well, now the scientists that are receiving these federal dollars for doing this research have come forward and said, hey, here's what we're already comfortable with. Here's what we're already doing. Yeah. And here's what we know is happening in rogue laboratories where they're mm-hmm. getting either private funding or whatever. And so now we need to move the debate forward. Well, anyway, I had been invited to be part of a film. I'm going to go back to that now and continue that research. I intend to be both part of that, and that's probably to answer your question, that's where I'm going back to. I did include a couple of chapters in this book, Apollyon Rising 2012, on this subject matter. Some of this is spectacular. You know, there are debates right now that are being funded, for instance, at Arizona State University. And they're not just talking about the integration of humans with animals. They're talking about the spiritual aspects of this. And they're even the Sophia Project. People can Google this. This is being funded through Arizona State University right now, where they're talking about the merging of humans and animals. But the Sophia Project part of this study is we want to speculate about how this might open the door for us to be able to communicate with invisible entities. And they're talking about communicating with the dead, a universal force, God, extraterrestrials. It's the most amazing thing. It's actually happening True. In our universities.
That is. But this, what would you call this creature in terms of what it would look like? I mean, is it possible we'd have a pig's head on a human body? I mean, can they go that far one day?
Well, the Reuters report actually starts out, the opening line. Let me give you the headline of this so you can look it up. It's called Scientists Want Debate on Animals with Human Genes. It's a Reuters report, Monday, November 9. So it was a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago. Opening line, a mouse that can speak, a monkey with Down syndrome, dogs with human hands and feet.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is the debate. This is where we're going. And frankly, I don't see how they're going to be able to stop any of this because, George Bush, I think in 2006 or earlier, had called for legislation that would prohibit the creating of human-animal chimeras, but it didn't have any effect on anything. We're doing it in California. We're doing it in the U.S., Australia, China, the U.K., all around the world, because where private funds are available, there are no laws that can restrict the use of private funds for this kind of research. So it's widespread, and the debate really only has to do with those laboratories who would be receiving tax dollars. That's the debate. In fact, that's what they said in the article. We want to have this public debate because we want to find out how much of this is palatable to the taxpayer. What are they willing to accept? And to the extent they are willing to accept it, then we can do this with full knowledge of the public. To the extent they're not willing to accept it, then it has to go into SAPOC budgets or behind closed doors. DARPA takes the public funds and pays $50 for a hammer, and a dollar goes to the hammer, and $49 goes into some laboratory in Latin America where we've got a military lab that are building these things.
This mixture, Tom, of human and animal, though, is absolutely shocking. We'll be back with phone calls with Tom Horn in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.